All right, welcome back. Special edition of Who's Talking from the 62nd Annual ACC Tournament, Frank and Hobbo courtside, and we are joined again this evening by the executive editor of the Saber, among other titles, head women's basketball coach at Western Albemarle High School. I think he may be as proud of that as he is the Saber thing, but that's another issue. A man that likes talking hoop, Chris Wright. All right, Chris, we talked yesterday about the game tonight. You went home and slept on it. Any change in assessment of how you look at the contest tonight between Virginia and Carolina?
The biggest thing I had forgotten from the first game, we talked a little bit about offensive rebounding yesterday, that Carolina really thrives on that, and that Virginia had to keep them off the glass to win. If you go back and look at the first game, Carolina had 11 offensive rebounds, scored 11 points off of those offensive rebounds, and still lost by 14 points. So you can get away with Carolina getting a few putbacks as long as you don't give them, you know, 50% of their points on that or something like that and still get it done, provided you defend in the other areas. And here's the other little wrinkle, only 8 turnovers in the first North Carolina game. That's been a real problem lately. Virginia's turning the ball over at a really high rate.
And why do you think that is, your assessment of the higher turnover numbers?
A lot of it feels careless, you know what I mean, like bad decisions that we typically don't see. I feel like a lot of it is Malcolm Brogdon driving into traffic. I think some of it is London Perantes trying to make a big play versus just the easy play. But those guys are pretty steady overall. So
let me give you a potential theory as a coach. The one game where the turnovers picked up was Syracuse. They play a 2-3 zone. Is Virginia, was it a zone that maybe they weren't used to attacking or they were a little tentative and as a consequence they created some turnovers?
With Syracuse, Louisville played a lot of zone. Virginia Tech played a lot of zone. So a lot of these recent games have featured zone as part of the equation.
And do
the
you expect that tonight? Because yesterday Carolina played 2-3 zone against Louisville.
Carolina has thrown zone at Virginia some in the past couple of seasons. A 3-2 at one time, a 2-3 a couple of times. You know, they've got the old school point zone that Coach Smith used to run that they can pull out of the bag.
Now, I was a big fan of that because that really opened up the corner jump shot. So I love the point zone. But, you know, to be honest, I think if Virginia has a weakness offensively, it's perimeter shooting. Now, hopefully, Evan Nolte will be good to go tonight and Malcolm Brogdon will shoot better. But from my perspective, I've been surprised that more teams don't zone Virginia.
The reason I think Carolina might do it is their bigs are not great dealing with screens, particularly on-ball screens. And what Virginia did in the second half last time down in Chapel Hill was ball screen them to death. They scored 12 of their 43 points in the second half off of ball screen action. That's almost 30% of their points in the half off of just on-ball screens. And it was because Carolina bigs couldn't get out there and hedge and recover effectively. So you could see North Carolina go zone just to protect those bigs from that specific strategy if they can't guard it.
One last question. If they do that, what does Virginia need to do to attack the zone?
I think the biggest thing against most zones is high post. If you can get the ball to the high post, whether off the dribble or off the pass, it really opens things up. Virginia does a lot of different things to do that. They screen the zone to do it. They flash guards in there, mainly Malcolm Brogdon. They have a 4-high set where they put both posts on the two elbows that they try to get it in that way. So they have different ways they try to do it. But Virginia prefers to work through the high post, and that typically makes sense against most zones.
Let me jump in here real quick. Just noticed that Mike Toby, Isaiah Wilkins, and B.J. Stith have come out as the first Cavaliers for a little free shoot on the basket down there at one end. And I see Coach Richie McKay is strolling around, and quite a few Wahoo fans were cheering when they came out. There's only 3 or 4 Tar Heels shooting. I see Bryce Johnson is out here. You see the lights from ESPN Game Day over in one corner, and those guys are taking up a lot of space this year. This is a very exciting time. We're essentially a little bit more than an hour away from tip-off. The Greensboro Coliseum seats 22,000 and change. And we fully expect a packed house.
Oh, it'll be packed tonight. Don't worry about that.
Oh, yeah. And great games. I mean, think about this. After Virginia and Carolina go to war, then Duke and Notre Dame come out and talk about it. That's going to be a very interesting contest. We're not going to spend any energy on that. But I see Jack Salt is out here. He's
redshirting this year. Yeah, as a matter of fact, North Carolina State didn't spend much energy against Duke last night.
Yeah, that. And I got to tell you, Hobbo, you predicted that they were the dark horse danger team.
I am out of the prediction business. I have been dreadful. But, you know, I could have lost a lot of money on that game because I thought State was coming in playing really well. I still think they have the parts to be a very effective hole, but that's another subject for another day. Maybe they'll get in the hot in the NCAA tournament because they're probably still going to get a bid.
Let me throw out some interesting stats here. I was looking at Carolina's record against conference teams. 11-7 overall. They were 5-4 at home this year, which has got to be a first. 6-3 away, 0-0 neutral. But in all games on neutral courts this year, they were 5-1. If you can call this neutral, I would call this a home court for Carolina, and in which case they only won two out of every three games.
Well, I'm not sure it's a home game against Virginia. Certainly, I think Louisville probably felt it was a home game for Carolina yesterday afternoon.
And judging by Rick Pitino's quick post-game press conference where he took all of two questions and then stormed the locker room to, I guess, give his players and assistant coaches an undressing.
You'd have to say Louisville had a rude introduction to the Atlantic Coast Conference tournament, but next year's another year. I'm sure they will be back.
All right, Chris, let's get down to brass tacks here. Virginia has to do what three things tonight in this environment, going up against history, 0-5 in this building against the Tar Heels, to walk away with a victory and a date probably with Duke as expected in the finals?
You know, I think the biggest one for me that I've been looking at all day is I think you need to put London Perantes in a playmaking position. He's had four straight games of five assists or more. That's the second time this season he's done that. If you're looking for little subtle ways that London Perantes has improved, he didn't do that at all last year. He only went back-to-back once with five or more assists. Now he's done it twice, four games in a row this year. So he's subtly better as a playmaker, as good as he was as a freshman. He was really good against North Carolina, 15 points, six assists in that first game. If you could put him in a playmaking decision role tonight and then let him kind of play off of that, I think that bodes well for Virginia against this particular matchup against North Carolina. So
I think
that's
we talked about that. I think Virginia matches up reasonably well against North Carolina. You know, in some way, of course, I thought yesterday was the scary game because to me, coming in as the top seed in the quarterfinal, I mean, it's really, you don't want to lose that game. And Florida State is unbelievably athletic. They got the Xavier, what's his name, hyphenated last name, who scored 30 in 5 minutes down at Miami. So they clearly got guys who could put the ball in the basket.
That's Raythan Mays.
Raythan Mays. So, I mean, Carolina, I just think, you know, you worry about their bigs. You got to be cognizant of Page. But otherwise, I think defensively, Tony's defensive scheme would match up well against Carolina.
It certainly seems to. The matchup that I'm fascinated by is kind of the small forward matchup. Evan Nolte only played three minutes in Chapel Hill. 3 minutes. He played 30-plus last night because of Justin Anderson just now coming back. So he's going to play more tonight than he did the first matchup with UNC. That probably puts him up with Tokido or with Justin Jackson. So can they continue to neutralize that position like they did in the first game? Justin Anderson dominated that matchup in the first game. He had seven assists in addition to scoring 16 points. So can Nolte have a good night against North Carolina?
Well, speaking of that, do you expect more out of Justin tonight, game two of his return?
I don't think he can go more than, say, 20 minutes or so. He played 12 yesterday. I could see it going up tonight. I have a hard time seeing him play 30 minutes. So to me, that means Nolte's going to play a fair amount again tonight, probably in the 20s somewhere when the dust settles at the end of this one.
I'd be shocked if he plays that many minutes. Not to be argumentative, just I think he was so out of sync, particularly on the offensive end of the court. And why wouldn't he be? He missed, you know, the crunch part of the latter third of the season, basically, with all the major opponents. And so I just think, you know, if he gets 10, 12 minutes and he can contribute and maybe get a basket or a couple foul shots, a couple rebounds and maybe a steal, and just get him off the floor healthy so he plays again, you know, Saturday night. You know?
Yeah, no, I think 20 minutes would be the maximum. I don't think he'll play 20, but I think that's about as far as you could push him if you want to.
Okay.
Well, and Evan Nolte made our three-point baskets yesterday, so you may need him out on the floor, and hopefully Brogdon and London will contribute to that as well. So
they're due. No two ways about it. I thought it was an aberration that Malcolm Brogdon and London Perantes, they really were not effective, you know, offensively.
All right. We're going to go to our halfway break, which is now top of the hour, not bottom of the hour. Right. When we return, we're going to have more with Chris Wright. And don't forget, later in the show, Voice of the Cavaliers, Dave Kane, will join us for his assessment of the big one tonight. So stay tuned. Who's Talking will return after these messages.